I should start this morning by thanking Lori for that very skillful retelling of the Samson story for children. I don't know if you remember the picture Bible books that you had as a child. I know I've compared the ones that I grew up with compared to the ones that we've either purchased or have been given to us for our kids. And there's been a lot of editing that I think is appropriate. I remember gruesome pictures of Samson in my storybook Bibles, and well, Desmond Tutu, for one, and I'll appeal to his authority, it's not in his children's Bible. It's a difficult story, and it's a really difficult story for kids. So thanks, Lori, for that. That was really well done. This morning, we are continuing our series, Broken Resolutions. The Bible is full of stories of individuals who are flawed and make mistakes, but the idea of broken resolutions, especially in the Samson story, is a bit more specific. Samson is definitely flawed, but if breaking a resolution involves failing to do something one is intended, or that one has intended, or is supposed to do, this pretty much epitomizes the Samson story. The Samson narrative is found in Judges chapters 13 through 16, but I'll retell some of it instead of reading all those chapters. The Israelites again did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord gave them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. Although it's not specifically mentioned exactly why, the context within the Samson story is placed, it suggests that God's people had again turned to idolatry. And in the midst of this situation, Manoah's wife, she isn't named, although she probably is the most exemplary character in the whole Samson narrative, she receives a message from an angel telling her that although she has not been able to have children, she will have a son. She is also given very specific instructions. She is not to drink wine or any strong drink or eat anything unclean, and the son she is going to give birth to is to be consecrated to God as a Nazirite from birth. Not only that, the angel reveals that her son is going to begin to deliver Israel from the hands of the Philistines. So Samson is born, and the Spirit of the Lord begins to stir in him. The next we hear of Samson is when he is at an age to get married. He goes down to Timnah, and he sees a Philistine woman he is immediately attracted to. He then tells his parents that he wants her for his wife, and he instructs them to go and get her for him. Samson's parents object, wanting him to marry someone from their own people, but Samson insists. So together with his parents, Samson travels to the woman's town to make arrangements. On the way, Samson walks by a vineyard, and a lion springs out at him. The Spirit of the Lord rushes on Samson, and he tears the lion in two with his bare hands. When he later returns to marry the woman, he checks out the spot where he had killed the lion, and he finds that bees have made a nest inside the carcass. He removes the honey, eats it, and gives some to his parents. Not only does he not tell his parents where the honey came from, he doesn't tell them about the lion at all. The wedding is a bit of a disaster. Samson makes a wager that no one will be able to solve a riddle that he puts forward, and no one can until the Philistine men threaten Samson's bride and force her to coax the answer from him. Samson loses the bet, but he knows he has been betrayed. So he goes out and he collects what he owes by killing 30 Philistine men. When Samson later returns to his wife, he finds out that she has been given to another man. This starts a cycle of escalating violence. Samson burns a Philistine's crops by tying torches to 300 foxes' tails, and in retaliation, Samson's bride and her father are killed. Samson then slaughters Philistines on two occasions, including 1,000, with the jawbone of a donkey after a failed attempt to capture him. The Philistines again try to capture Samson, but he escapes by ripping off and carrying away the Gaza city gates. It is only by enlisting the help of Delilah that the Philistines are finally able to capture Samson. After repeatedly lying to her and subsequent foiled Philistine attempts to capture him, Samson finally tells Delilah the secret behind his strength. Samson's hair is cut, the Philistines seize and blind him, and he is forced to perform manual labor. Samson's story ends when the Philistines have a festival in honor of their god. Samson is brought out as a spectacle, but by this time his hair has grown back. He asks to lean against the pillars supporting the temple. He prays. God restores his strength, and he brings down the building on top of himself, in the process killing thousands. So. The Samson story, like most of the book of Judges for that matter, is highly problematic, especially for theological traditions like ours that emphasize the peace teachings of Jesus. Because we're talking about broken resolutions, using Samson as an example, our discussion this morning will focus on the events of Samson's life as they are recorded in the Judges' texts, treating them as if they happened more or less the way they have been recorded. Samson's story is full of violence, much of which seems self-serving or based on revenge. So at the outset, I must admit what this sermon is not. It is not a thorough exegesis of the Judges' text, and it cannot account for the violence within the text. At most, I can suggest that God is sovereign, and there is mystery and there is tension throughout the Bible. This tension is beautifully described in the poetry of William Blake. I'm going to read two poems that parallel each other because I can't find better words to paint this picture. The first is the lamb. Little lamb, who made thee? Dost thou know who made thee? Gave thee life and bid thee feed by the stream and o'er the mead. Gave thee clothing of delight, softest clothing, woolly, bright. Gave thee such a tender voice, making all the vales rejoice. Little lamb, who made thee? Dost thou know who made thee? Little lamb, I'll tell thee. Little lamb, I'll tell thee, he is called by thy name, for he calls himself a lamb. He is meek and he is mild. He became a little child. I a child and thou a lamb, we are called by his name. Little lamb, God bless thee. Little lamb, God bless thee. Now hear the tiger. Tiger, tiger, burning bright in the forest of the night, what immortal hand or eye can frame thy fearful symmetry? In what distant deeps or skies burnt the fire of thine eyes? On what wings dare he aspire? What the hand dare seize the fire? And what shoulder and what art could twist the sinews of thy heart? And when thy heart began to beat, what dread hand and what dread feet? What the hammer, what the chain? In what furnace was thy brain? What the anvil, what dread grasp dare its deadly terrors clasp? When the stars threw down their spears and watered heaven with their tears, did he smile his work to see? Did he who made the lamb make thee? Tiger, tiger, burning bright in the forest of the night, what immortal hand or eye dare frame thy fearful symmetry? Did the God who made the tiger also make the lamb? Did the God revealed in Jesus also call Samson? The tiger and the lamb are difficult to reconcile. But while we cannot ignore the violence in the Samson story and that much of Samson's behavior appears selfish or at least self-centered, guided by his desires and his appetites, we likewise cannot ignore that God listens to Samson's prayers. Despite our reservations with the story, the text suggests that Samson was aligning with God's purposes. Now, God might not work this way with us. We might even believe that God never wanted to, or never even actually did work in that way in the past either. But taking the Judges' text as it is, we can't ignore that God repeatedly answers Samson's prayers. Moreover, we cannot ignore the fact that Samson is listed with the heroes of faith in Hebrews chapter 11. Heroes from whom Menno Simons suggested we can learn how simple, straightforward, and ordinary, how honest, bold, and obedient, how full of all kinds of virtues and fruits genuine faith has been from the beginning. So what do we do with Samson? Much early and medieval Christian biblical interpretation relied on allegory and typology, that is, interpreting the Old Testament as prefiguring Christian belief. So by interpreting Samson typologically, that Samson prefigured Christ, the impact of much of Samson's problematic behavior is minimized. In short, his faith is prioritized over his failings. Now, even though this line of interpretation held ground until the Reformation and it is still used by some today, its shortcomings notwithstanding, it wouldn't leave us much to work with in a series on broken resolutions. So I've suggested that we can't write Samson off completely. A negative interpretation must be tempered by our reading of Hebrews chapter 11. That said, Samson certainly was flawed. But the context of his shortcomings bears examining. Victor Matthews has argued that the motifs of freedom and entrapment are central to understanding the Samson text. In Matthews' words, who else is so immune to law, morality, and dangerous situations, and yet who is more tightly fettered from the womb than he is by vows, by the decisions and claims made upon him by women, and by the decisions of his God, who is, quote, seeking a pretext to act against the Philistines? So without pushing this interpretation too far, Samson is announced before his birth. So too are Isaac and John the Baptist and Jesus. But before he is even born, Samson is bound to be a Nazarite. As a Nazarite, Samson was consecrated to God and also bound by a number of regulations. And we heard some of those this morning. But as we have seen, Samson repeatedly breaks his Nazarite vows. Judges 14 begins with Samson asking his parents to arrange his marriage to a Philistine woman. Samson has seen her, he is attracted to her, and he wants to marry her. But marrying a Philistine woman was a violation of cultural norms, and having his parents arrange it would have created familial tension. Samson's parents' objection is telling. They refer to the Philistine derogatorily as uncircumcised. There's obviously no love lost between the Israelites and the Philistines, but there is more to Samson's parents' animosity. Throughout the book of Judges, there's a pattern. Israel sins, there is oppression, and the people cry out for liberation. In Samson's story, though, the people do not cry out. At this point in the history of Israel, they have acknowledged that the Philistines rule over them. This is the reason that Samson can so easily move between Israelite and Philistine spaces, not because there's peace, but because the Philistine rule was so complete. Samson will begin to liberate Israel from this oppression, but unlike under previous judges of Israel, this deliverance will not occur in Samson's lifetime. Samson's heroic feats are well known, but for our purposes, it is significant to note that within the account of his feats, Samson is recorded breaking his Nazarite vows on various occasions. Samson kills a lion with his bare hands, but later eats honey out of the animal's carcass, a violation of the Nazarite prohibition from coming in contact with corpses. Now, as an aside, Samson's use of the donkey's jawbone as a weapon, this might be a different case, as some commentators suggest. He obviously touched a corpse, but the jawbone, we can probably interpret this as a provision from God. That's an aside. Just in case you're wondering, why can he touch one and not the other? Samson's wedding feast lasts for days, and knowing Samson's appetites, it's probably safe to conclude that he did not refrain from all wine and strong drink. Most famously, Samson reveals to Delilah the secret to his strength. His hair has never and is never to be cut. Significantly, drawing attention to the breaking of these vows says nothing about the other morally objectionable behavior that Samson engages in, particularly relating to Philistine women. Samson leaves Gaza triumphantly, carrying off the city gates, bar and all, but he was there in the first place visiting a prostitute. So where does this leave us? Samson's feats are certainly complicated by broken vows, immoral behavior, and acts of gruesome violence. But at the same time, Judges 14:19 records that when Samson, enraged because he was betrayed and his riddle had been solved, he killed 30 men and took their spoil, it happened when the Spirit of the Lord rushed on him. The Spirit of the Lord rushed on him again when he killed 1,000 men with the jawbone at Lehi. The text suggests that God empowered Samson's feats. Moreover, at the two high points of Samson's life as a judge over Israel, his victory over the Philistines at Lehi and his destruction of the temple of Dagon, which also ends his life, Samson cries out to God, and God gives Samson what he asks for. These are the only two times Samson cries out to God in the text. The first, to give him water so he will not die in the desert, and God provides a spring. The second, that God would restore his strength, allowing Samson to pull down the building, killing thousands. While we may find the violence troubling, if we make the connection between God-given victory and Samson's faithfulness, Samson's inclusion in Hebrews 11 becomes clearer. It becomes clearer still when we consider that Christ, the author and perfecter of our faith, is the culmination of the list of heroes. Samson might have demonstrated faith, but that does not mean that his behavior is to be emulated as Christ's is. So a key moment, Samson demonstrates faith, but his life is also marred by repeated unfaithfulness to his calling. Samson begins to deliver Israel, but he does not complete it. When considered within the whole line of judges, Samson is the last. But as the last, he is not, in J. Clinton McCann's words, quote, the glorious culmination of the series of judges, but rather its abysmal conclusion. But the story of Samson need not be depressing. Although deeply flawed, Samson reveals that in God's plan to overcome oppression, God can and does use individuals who are flawed. God is committed to God's purposes of justice despite human unfaithfulness. If the Samson story demonstrates that God has a pretext for deliverance and works powerfully through individuals when they are faithful, we can extend these truths into our own context in which we are bound by our call to follow Christ. I do not expect any of us to wield a jawbone, and I suspect that feats of strength are unlikely too, but the Spirit of God still empowers, and God's opposition to oppression remains. The question for us is whether we will be faithful.